Welcome to Just JKing, the podcast where we transform your HR headaches into high fives. Whether you're a founder, CEO, or just someone with HR questions you're too afraid to ask, we've got the insights, laughs, and light bulb moments that you crave.
Enjoying the show? Hit that five-star review and subscribe now so you never miss out.
Welcome to another episode of Just JKing with Jennifer and Kim, where we help turn your HR headaches into HR high fives. Today, we're tackling RIFs. So what are RIFs? Reduction in force, terminations. This is really called restructuring in many organizations.
Yeah, so I think, Kim, one thing that I've witnessed, which is really unfortunate, is that when we do a reduction in force as a quick cost savings, which it really is, you know, you sometimes, it's a big line item, of course, salaries, labor is very expensive. It seems like a great way to cut costs quickly. But a lot of times, I think we've both witnessed, you know, that headcount gradually get added back into the organization. The cost savings is there, therefore gone, but you've also lost all that experience and organizational knowledge that the people you let go took with them. And they're now off working somewhere else, you know, sharing their experience, knowledge, possibly training and education you paid for. And your cost savings has essentially evaporated into thin air as the organization just bulked back up to its original headcount. And I think I've seen that happen multiple times, and I'm sure you have too. So that's kind of a thing that you need to be really aware of when it looks like an easy solution.
Well, and anytime you're letting people go, you're also opening the door to legal challenges. If things aren't handled perfectly, lawsuits can definitely follow, and nobody wants that. And so that's a cost that you need to potentially either A, add some severance packages against to try to ensure that it doesn't happen, or B, be prepared to pay some costs associated with some legal challenges that are going to come as a result of that restructuring. So it takes us into costs, right? So yes, you're looking for savings, but we also need to estimate that there might be some costs associated with the reduction in force and upfront costs of severance, potential legal fees, and then hidden costs like loss of productivity can all add up really quickly. So when making a decision to restructure, you really need to weigh the costs against the potential savings.
Yeah, and just because we do both have clients in Canada and the US, and if any US clients aren't as familiar with the length of packages that are often required in Canada, I've seen it happen that the person is literally still on their package from being laid off and it's already time to bring in their replacement. Now you're paying two people for the same role, which will quickly erode any savings you made by doing those reduction in force cuts. You know, if some of the packages can be up to a year long, depending on the tenure and seniority of the employees that you're letting go. So if within that year, something fundamental changes in your economics and you need to add someone back in, now you're paying for both of them.
Yeah. And then we can think about the reputational hit. When you start cutting staff, word gets out on the street and it can harm your brand, making it harder to attract talent and potentially even affecting some customer trust. When your customers hear that you're actually terminating people, they're thinking that you're in trouble. And imagine if you're terminating the person that they actually have the relationship with. So there's that risk as well that needs to be considered before moving directly to a restructuring.
100%. I have absolutely had clients get customer cancellations because they've let go of the person that they had the relationship with, which would normally be an account manager or a salesperson. They'll just follow the person. And so you do have to take that into account as well.
And let's not underestimate the morale hit. Even if your top performers might start to question their future, I wonder if their value is truly recognized. So not only thinking about the people leaving, but also thinking about those that are staying behind. And have they now lost trust and confidence in the organization? And are they thinking that maybe they're next and they start looking for work?
Yeah, that's so costly. When people start to feel threatened, if they're, you know, conscientious go-getters, they'll start to shore up some insurance against having the same thing happen to them. And they might start looking for other work at an organization that they now view as being more stable than the one they're in.
But you know what, Jennifer? Sometimes it's the right option. Sometimes organizations absolutely need to restructure. They need to restructure because it's a long-term goal, not a short-term goal, but a longer-term goal where maybe they're closing a part of the business, or they actually have just decided to approach the market in a different way. And so there's three key things that I ask my clients to think about when they're planning for a reduction in force. So first of all, how do we determine who should be on the list of people to reduce? Performance, performance, performance. We need to look at the lowest performing employees in the organization as the potential first employees to be restructured throughout the organization. That is obviously the easiest to rationalize. And also the easiest to explain to employees who are staying behind, because whether you realize it or not, your strong employees know who the weak links are.
That's a whole other episode talking about how you can punish good employees by forcing them to work with non-performing ones.
Sure. The second thing to think about is tenure. So length of service matters, and people who've been with the company for a really long time have deep-rooted knowledge, and that's really hard to replace. But we need to make sure that tenure isn't the only thing that we're looking at, and we need to balance it properly with performance, because of course, performance is king.
And you don't want to keep a non-performing person just because their package is going to be larger because they've been with the company for longer. That's a huge mistake that will definitely erode morale within the remaining members of the organization.
100%. So definitely balancing performance and tenure and finding the right people to terminate, the people who ultimately, hopefully that their work can be absorbed by other people, or ultimately that the work has gone away completely. So the final piece, which I highly recommend that everybody do when they're looking to do a reduction in force, is to do an equity and bias check. Really important is run everything through an equity and bias lens. You need to ensure that decisions are fair, legally sound, and equitable, and that there's no discrimination claims in the end. So, if you're, for instance, doing a termination of 10 people and 8 of them are women, you may ask yourself if some bias has been added to the process. Now, if you can rationalize it because those 8 women are in the jobs or in the department where the work is actually going away, then that's fine, so long as it could be rationalized and you've asked yourself the right questions.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point that I'm sure a lot of organizations skip when they're going through a reduction in force.
So, Jennifer, ultimately, what we're saying is where and when you really do have to reduce force, where it's a legitimate business decision for a longer term strategy, there really are three things to think about: performance, tenure, and adding the equity and bias checkpoint. So ultimately, what we're saying is that sometimes a reduction in force and a restructuring is rationalized. It's the right decision. Thinking about performance, tenure, and then adding an equity and bias checkpoint are the right way to go about it.
Or, as we would say where I'm from, the squeeze isn't worth the juice.
That.
It's been very fortunate that I've kept my little maritime sayings out of this podcast so far. So that's your first taste.
I love it. Keep them coming.
That was a great conversation about rifts, and I hope that everyone found it really interesting. But before we go, we have something else fun that we want to talk to you about.
Today, we are excited to introduce a brand new segment of the Just JKing podcast that we're calling Ask Jennifer.
That's right. Even though it was suggested to us to call it Ask Jim, which I think would have been hilarious but confusing. So, Kennifer, it is. And Ask Kennifer is where we are going to answer our listeners' burning HR questions.
So bring us your toughest, most puzzling HR questions, and we will give you the kind of advice that actually works without sounding like it came straight from an employee handbook.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so you can submit your questions to us by email or by sending us a message on the Just JK LinkedIn page. And every week we're going to pick a few, or at least one, to answer during the podcast.
No judgments, no BS, just real actionable advice from the two people who've seen it all. And our audience is probably getting used to our very special approach to HR, Jennifer.
Right.
So go ahead and send us an email at askjustjking@gmail.com and submit your questions. And remember, on Ask Kennifer, there is no such thing as a stupid question.
But there are sure to be some great conversations.
So let's go to our mailbox and pull a listener question to get us started. All right, Jennifer, Max from Ottawa is asking, what do I do if I don't agree with my performance review?
Okay, well, to start off, I'm curious if Max got the opportunity to do a self-assessment before the actual formal review, as we discussed in our last episode. If not, if we're assuming that Max is coming at this from the total surprise perspective, I think you obviously have to start a conversation about that. You have to address it as soon as possible with the rater and share with them what you're disagreeing with and why. What other tips have you got?
So I would say, I mean, it's interesting timing because as we come into the end of the calendar year, I think a lot of people are going to be doing performance reviews now. And what I always say to employees is, look, at the end of the day, your manager ultimately gets the final say on your performance rating. But if you don't agree with it, you can go official and respond to it in writing. And whether or not that makes a change to the overall performance rating, at least you've gone on record to say that you haven't agreed with it. Now, if there's anything in your performance review that you believe is linked to, you know, some kind of workplace incident or something inappropriate, I think that that's different. And that's where you need to raise it to HR or to their leader. But if it's just simply, we don't agree with how it is that I've been performing, the best way to combat that is bringing facts.
So, yeah, I think the worst thing you can do is just ignore the fact that you don't agree with it and somehow hope that you're just going to forget about that going forward. Because what will actually happen is, you know, maybe after you have the conversation, you'll get some clarity and you'll understand a little bit better where the rating is coming from. Maybe it just wasn't validated very well in the process. And so maybe there's some room to discover, you know, that you don't disagree with it as much as you initially thought. But also, if you try to just sort of move past it, my suspicion is that more times than not, it's going to build resentment and it's probably going to end up coming back on you at some point. So always like have the courageous conversation and try to get to an understanding of either why it was given or make your case as to why you think it's inaccurate or maybe all the information wasn't considered when it was being filled out. But to your point, the manager does get the final say. The review is the review, but it is always helpful to have your own opinion represented on your file as well, which you're totally entitled to do.
Yeah. I would say one last thing. I agree with everything you said, Jennifer, and that is that, you know, may have some recency bias whereby they might be doing a performance review on your last project or on the last couple of months. It's incumbent upon employees to maintain their own notes of their performance throughout the year. And I find that where it is effective in helping a manager to see that the performance that they've reviewed may not be 100% reflective of the overall performance is when employees bring forward examples. And if they bring forward examples of things that have happened earlier in the period that maybe the manager legitimately forgot about, I think that could make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's fantastic advice because let's be honest, managers don't always go into this process being super organized, feeling like they have tons of time to complete it, that they're going to have total optimum ability to fill it out to the best of their ability and determined to knock it out of the park. I mean, they're a lot of times trying to get through quite a few in a given period of time. And sometimes it is a challenge for them to do it as well as they might like. And I think as long as you keep the conversation open, you'll probably find some room to reach a better end result than what it appears in the first initial review.
Yeah. So I think what we're saying is, one, have an open conversation, keeping the relationship in mind and making sure that it's a positive conversation. Two, be sure to know that you have the opportunity to respond and to have it reflected on your employee file. And three is keep notes throughout the year and really help your manager to perform an appropriate assessment that's a full reflection of your full performance, and keeping in mind that they might have a lot of performance reviews that they're completing. And it is possible that maybe they've missed some items. But finally, at the end of the day, the manager gets the last say on the overall performance review.
So we hope you found this information useful. And if you wanted to ask us a follow-up question, feel free to do so. And we hope everyone else got something out of our response as well.
To our listeners, if you want your question to be the next one up for discussion, please be sure to either send us a note on askjustjking@gmail.com, or feel free to add it to one of our LinkedIn posts in the comments, and we will be sure to discuss it on one of our follow-up podcasts. And that's a wrap on today's episode of Just JKing. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and took away some valuable insights to shake up your own HR game.
If you loved this episode, and we hope you did, make sure to hit that subscribe button, leave us a review, and share it with your network. We want to hear your thoughts, your feedback, and even your own wild HR stories.
And don't forget to connect with us on LinkedIn or drop us a message. Let us know what topics you want us to dive into next.
Until next time, keep it real, keep it human, and always keep JKing.
We'll see you next time on Just JKing. Thanks for listening.